Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, December 6th, 2019. Sudan's Prime Minister comes to Washington and talks about his country's relationship with South Sudan.
It wasn't by chance that my first visit outside Khartoum was to Juba, for two reasons mainly. One, the symbolism of this relationship between Sudan and South Sudan. We are one nation.
And South Sudanese university lecturers say they're happy the government has upped their pay.
They should keep the promise and then keep remitting those wages on time. Because each time a person gets his wages on time, then service delivery is also okay. It's excellent.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudan's Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok is in Washington, D.C. this week with a high-level delegation from his country. His team has spent the last few days speaking to U.S. policymakers on the Hill and at the U.S. State Department about recent developments in Sudan following the historic change in leadership in that country earlier this year. The delegation is also hoping to increase diplomatic partnerships with the United States. At an Atlantic Council event last night, Hamdok addressed a room full of people spelling out his government's goals during the transitional period.
Our number one and top priority is to stop the war and build the foundation of sustainable peace. Essentially, to stop the sufferings of our people in the IDP camps and refugee camps. We think the opportune time of stopping this war is now.
Other priorities include getting Sudan off the U.S. state sponsors of terror list, which would help Sudan participate in the international economy and usher in new business across the country. Sudan's national debt stands at $60 billion, according to Hamdok, who says decreasing the debt is a top priority, as it is one of the prerequisites to getting Sudan off the U.S. state sponsors of terrorism list. And last night, Hamdok spoke at length about Sudan's relationship with neighboring South Sudan.
It wasn't by chance that my first visit outside Khartoum was to Juba, for two reasons mainly. One, the symbolism of this relationship between Sudan and South Sudan. We are one nation. History obliged us, maybe mistakes and all that, to stay in two states, but we are one nation. Our brothers and sisters in South Sudan voted overwhelmingly for independence, 98% of them. So South Sudan independence should not and cannot be compromised. But we can live together as two sisterly nations.
Hamdok points out that Sudan shares its longest border with South Sudan, and the lines between the two countries should work for peace and prosperity. He says border disputes between Sudan and South Sudan will be addressed.
To honor the legacy of our late hero, John Garang, who called this Al-Tamazuj Belt, and we can think about this belt from Mdafog. It's a small town in our borders in Central Africa, to Al-Kurmuk in Ethiopia, transform it to that prosperous border. We don't need to demarcate it. We can leave it as soft borders. And through that process, we'll be able to address challenges of Abyei and others.
The Sudanese delegation is expected to leave Washington later this weekend. Reporter and VOA Our Voices show host Ayan Bior attended the meeting with Hamdok last night and prepared that report. Lecturers in South Sudan's public universities welcomed the government's decision recently to increase their salaries by 60%. A Rumbek University lecturer says he now earns the equivalent of $700 to $800 a month, which is paid in South Sudanese pounds. Before the increase, a lecturer was earning the equivalent of $25 a month. Now, a professor who earns more than a lecturer earns $1,300 a month. Viola Elias has the story for VOA from Juba.
Deng Mei, a lecturer at the University of Rumbek, says he and lecturers at his institution receive 1 month wages this week based on the new salary structure. Last week, lecturers at Rumbek University and Dr. John Gareng Memorial University refused to give their student examination after not being paid in months. That forced the student to march to the offices of their state officials, demanding their lecturers get paid their salaries in arrears. Men says, following the government decisions to pay their salaries, Rumbek University lecturers agreed to give their students the end of semester examination.
We have released our timetable
for students, and now they are sitting for examination. It is a compromise we have given since they have given us 1 month. We hope to get other remaining month from the government. Let the government prioritize the payment of the lecturers because we produce quality students that will help the nation to develop faster than any institution.
Men says lecturers and professors are still demanding the government pay their 4 month salaries in arrears. Emmanuel Vitali, a lecturer at the University of Juba, says though lecturers and professors at his institution have yet to receive their salaries, he and his colleagues are excited over the salary hike. Vitali says administration officials ask lecturers to provide their accounts details to the university so it can deposit their salaries into their respective bank accounts. Vitali says he hopes with this new salary structure, staff at South Sudan public universities will do their best to provide students with quality education.
Now they have already given 1 month and they have promised that the others will come in the next weeks. So my message to them is that they should keep the promise and then keep remitting those wages on time. Because each time a person gets his wages on time, then service delivery is also okay. It's excellent.
Niall Gordon Cole, a lecturer at Dr. John Garang Memorial University of Science and Technology, says the new salary structure will help attract other professional lecturers from other countries to South Sudan. Cole says, although the new salary structure is not competitive compared to other universities in the East African region, it is better than what lecturers had been getting. Cole says, the higher pay will not only boost the quality of teaching in public universities, but will motivate former lecturers who quit their jobs to return to teaching. She says this development will also accelerate the return of many students who travel to neighboring countries to seek a quality education. She urged her colleagues to focus on delivering quality education for South Sudanese at home.
Let's all focus.
Let us take our students as quality products so when they go out on the labor market, then we will have people who will be fixing our roads, will be treating us so that we don't go to India. Let us focus our attention to developing our home.
The government approved nearly 583 million South Sudanese pounds for salaries and wages of civil servants in the Ministry of Higher Education, Science and Technology in the 2019-2020 fiscal year budget. According to the new salary structure, a professor now earns more than 500,000 South Sudanese pounds a month, while a technician earns more than 100,000 South Sudanese pounds per month. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, is appealing for $180 million to provide humanitarian assistance to South Sudanese women and children next year. UNICEF's country representative for South Sudan says the money will be used to prevent malnutrition, vaccinate children against killer diseases, and provide education, among other things. Deng Magat has more for VOA from Juba.
Mohamed Ayoya, UNICEF's country representative for South Sudan, says his agency urgently needs money to respond to the most immediate needs of South Sudanese women and more than 4 million children.
This may look like a lot of money, 180 million,
But clearly, if you look at how much this costs per child, it doesn't represent much. In fact, of this 180 million is going to be like $50 per child, which is going to save many lives if we are able to mobilize it all for the children in South Sudan.
Ayoya says by spending only $50 on each child, UNICEF will be able to give life-saving humanitarian assistance to more than 3 million children across South Sudan. That's about 80% of the children who need help in the country. Ayoya says he expects the number of children suffering from acute malnutrition to increase due to malaria, measles, diarrhea, and poor nutrition.
1.3 million children under 5 will suffer from acute malnutrition next year. And that's really big, 1.3 million children. And this is not actually taking into account the fact that we are probably going to see increased level of food insecurity, but we are also going to see a negative impact of the floods that we have all been facing, in particularly the eastern part of the country. Those floods are increasing the rates of malaria.
Madzoyen, the head of field operations at UNICEF, says the $180 million will enable children's agency to save the lives of hundreds of thousands of acutely malnourished children.
268,000 children treated for severe acute malnutrition. This is what we aim for in 2020. And almost 3 million children provided with vitamin A. Vitamin A is a very simple, cheap and very effective way to boost children's health and protect their health. Over 500,000 children will be vaccinated against measles, and providing 340,000 nets, insecticide-treated nets against malaria. On WASH, providing over 800,000 people accessing safe water, and 300,000 people receiving sanitation services.
Oyen says that includes support to POC sites. Ayoya says the child mortality rate in South Sudan is alarming. 1 out of 10 children in South Sudan die before the age of 5.
I am 100% sure that children growing in South Sudan have no role in the situation in the country. Yet they are paying the highest price, and they are also the future of this country. So the highest attention should be given to them. If you want to see a prosperous South Sudan, we need to continue to invest in the child generation, ensuring that they are not only surviving, but actually thriving.
Ayoya is calling on aid agencies, donors, and the government to work together to improve the lives of South Sudanese children. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
To South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A Kenyan official instructs authorities to arrest Nairobi's governor. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
who do you listen to in difficult times and why?
Mostly I listen to my wife and my dad, because these two people, they know me better than anybody.
I listen most to my mom because she's been through a lot. She has a lot of experience. And anytime I tell her something, she kind of has a solution to the problem.
The person to listen to in difficult times: one, your parents. Two, if you're married, then it should be your partner, because your partner is the person who is there with you every time.
In difficult times, I most of the time listen to my fiancé. When I speak to him, he gives me good advice that helps to calm me down.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Kenya's public prosecutor has ordered the arrest of Nairobi's governor on suspicion of economic crimes. In a news conference today, the prosecutor said the governor and his associates illegally procured more than $3.5 million in public money. Rael Ambour reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Kenya's public prosecutor Nurdin Haji on Friday ordered the immediate arrest and prosecution of Nairobi County Governor Gideon Mbuvi. He said the governor and nearly a dozen senior Nairobi County officials faced charges of unlawful acquisition of public property, money laundering, and other economic crimes. According to Haji, investigations by Kenya's Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission found enough evidence to warrant arrest and prosecution of Mbuvi and his co-accused.
In making this decision, the Office of the Director of Public Prosecution is cognizant of the principle of innocence until proven guilty, the determination of which can only be made by a court of law. The decision to charge is based on the evidence that is available to the DPP at the time the decision is made.
Last month, Mbuvi tried to stop the Corruption Commission from investigating him, but the court declined to issue a temporary restraint order. In Friday's briefing, Haji warned Mbuvi supporters against any attempts to subvert the cause of justice.
In recent times, we have seen that corruption fights back, and there have been blunted, misguided attempts to intimidate, threaten, and malign investigating officers and agencies. We shall not allow such dastardly acts to go on, and I have directed the law enforcement agencies to investigate any such attempts, and upon establishment of evidence, additional charges shall be preferred against those perpetrating these acts.
Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta has in the past said that he will not relent in the country's fight against corruption until the country is swept clean of the practice. For critics such as political analyst Herman Manyora, those kind of comments sound like mayor talk.
Even all this drama around the arrest, where is a single conviction? Even in instances where people have owned up for having received money from NYS, without having tendered for anything, they have admitted as much. They are not in jail. So where is the will? I'm not convinced there's a will to fight corruption.
In the slums of Nairobi, Mbuvi commands a lot of support because he has presented himself as a defender of the poor, one who provides useful projects and jobs. Sami Olo, who leads a garbage collection unit, blamed politics on the governor's woes. He said he is the governor and he has tried. He is looking at all corners in Nairobi. The youth in Dandora, Kayole, Huruma are at work. They should instead support him to help the youth. That's better than these politics that they are playing for their own interests. Despite the vows by Kenyatta and his predecessors, corruption has remained deeply entrenched in Kenya for decades. The 2018 Corruption Perception Index by Transparency International listed Kenya as the 144th most corrupt country out of 180 in the world. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Diplomats, UN agency heads, and non-governmental organizations converged this week to discuss rebuilding towns and villages scarred by the separatist war in Cameroon. Cameroon's government says it needs help reconstructing destroyed schools and public buildings. Those in attendance said they are willing to help but want to make sure the war is over first. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the details from Yaoundé.
Prime Minister Joseph John Gute, who convened the meeting on behalf of the government, pleaded with the international community to help reconstruct Cameroon after close to 4 years of bloody conflicts that have killed thousands and caused severe damage in dozens of towns and villages. Gute says most citizens are opting for peace because they are